You're listening to episode 329 of the Major Issues Podcast, and on this episode, Comic Book Click is celebrating anime all May long as we review Iron Man Rise of the Technovore. The Major Issues Podcast starts right now! Hello everybody out there in comic book land, my name is George Serrano, aka The Don, and if you're listening to this, you can only be here for one reason, and that's a brand new episode of the Major Issues Podcast, brought to you by ComicBookClick.com. It's a beautiful day in May, the first day of our full-on May celebration of anime, and I couldn't do an episode focusing on anime alone. Sir, if you could please introduce yourself.
Yo, what's good, y'all? It's gonna be May. It's your boy, A-Rob, the Marvel God.
Yes, I've gone all the way to the east. I've tracked down the seer of all worlds. I've tracked down our main man, the astonishing, the spectacular, and downright uncanny, A-Rob, the Marvel God, to talk about anime, but more specifically, to talk about Iron Man Rise of Technovore, a 2013 Japanese superhero anime film. And that's what we'll be discussing here today. Anime is blowing up right now. The joke across the internet is that there is a bunch of people seething over the fact that they may have not been treated the best in their younger years when anime was kind of first emerging on this side, on the West, because we're late for everything. I like to remind people all the time that like we saw Dragon Ball 20 years maybe late, you know, 15 years late. So, you know, I always like to bring that up. But I feel, you know, obviously comic books and manga go hand in hand. And I feel like their adaptations, the comic book adaptations and anime go hand in hand. There's still people, you know, we sit here on this side of the world and go like, ugh, you thought that was good. You should read the comic book. And they do the same thing over there. Like, well, in the manga, actually, what actually happens.
Literally the same thing. The same exact thing.
What are your earliest memories of this genre of cartoon? When would you say you got wrapped up into anime?
Oh man, back in the early Toonami days, back in 1998, 1999, back when I was a young pup, I thought, like, you know, Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon, Gundam. Boy. I thought they were just cartoons. Nope, it's anime. Like, so I had an early exposure, like, you know, really early on. So it was like, I've always been really into anime without even knowing it. I'm talking Dragon Ball reboot, like Gundam, like the first Gundam, like
Inuyasha. That's pretty early right in the game with that.
Inuyasha, Yu Yu Hakusho. I can go on, honestly. Outlaw Star.
Yeah, I remember those days too, and just the animation style was nothing like I'd ever seen. I talk a lot about my fandom of Power Rangers coming from the fact that, like, no children's television show was doing martial arts, right? Like, no one was doing actual techniques and flips and kicks. Like, no one was doing that kind of stuff. And then you fast forward to this anime stuff, and not only are they having full-blown action scenes, but the physics in it, you know, the energy and the force and the power and the way they're able to showcase those things, these things that seemingly are indescribable, but they're able to showcase through art on here. You know, you can even go as far back as Akira and how much that's
influenced, like, a lot of pop culture.
We're still kind of, you know, trying to catch up to a lot of this stuff, and now we have more stuff like My Adventures of Superman, direct anime influence. I feel like there's a tremendous amount of anime influence in Invincible, you know, as well. The Superman stuff, I remember thinking, like, oh, like, this should have been an anime. I remember thinking, why does this fit so well? And I'm like, well, it's, let me see the best way to put this. Like, Superman is the first superhero, or the biggest superhero. You know, he is, you know,
he's the
template. And then you go to Shonen Jump animes, right? And you have these power levels and power scaling and you know, the hero protagonist and coming from the Kansases of the world, you know, and then realizing their potential and the heart and the humor and all that kind of stuff. It's a 101. And I just think that I remember thinking at the time, like, this is like the most obvious choice. Like, why didn't this stuff get done like this a long time ago? And we'll talk after our review about certain other projects that or characters that could possibly use a bit of an anime makeover. But with this, with Rise of Technovore, do you think that this works as an anime adaptation?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like Iron Man, War Machine, the Avengers as a whole, it just works. Like Iron Man and War Machine, that screams mecha anime. Like just 100%. The way they're designed, the way they're moved, the way they showcase like their powers. Like War Machine in the old Iron Man cartoon or Iron Man in general, they really couldn't like showcase their abilities, the tech, the power. But in anime, with Madhouse animating, they did a lot. They showed a lot, like the fantasticness of S.H.I.E.L.D., like the crazy tech and like all the like astounding abilities and just the visuals of it. Just the visuals alone would just blow your mind, because like you see how fast they're moving, how like powerful the beams and the explosions are. It's really showcasing how like powerful, like really cool these characters really are. And you can get away with a lot in anime doing that.
Yeah, I feel like, and again, I might just be misinformed, but I feel like a lot of American animation, especially when we were growing up, was made on the cheap on purpose, right? These are things that like made to sell action figures. Not to say things like Yu-Gi-Oh and Pokemon weren't, but I'm saying like, I think of certain moments in anime, like the gleam of an evil character's eye or the smoke literally clearing. These are things that weren't being done in American, like the attention to detail wasn't being done in American cartoons, to the point that like one of the jokes in Scooby-Doo is like, oh, the door that's gonna open is the one that's darker than all the other doors in the thing, because it's the only one made to animate, because they didn't bother doing it for the rest of it. I think that attention to detail really sings through with stuff like this. I really dug this. I think it possibly could have been longer and there could have been a couple of tweaks, but I like this universe. I like this universe that they sort of set up here.
Like especially with all the cameos from the other characters from other shows or the other animated Marvel projects.
So this film was, like I said, produced by Madhouse, and it follows up on the Marvel anime series. It's directed by Hiroshi Hamasaki, an anime director who's known for his works including Shiguri, Death Frenzy, and Tech No Lies, which I guess makes a lot of sense with the tech stuff. And it's based on a story written by Brandon Uman, Michael Mercer, and Norman Reedus of The Walking Dead fame, Daryl Dixon, voice Tony Stark and Punisher, respectively. The film was released in North America on Blu-ray and DVD on April 16th, 2013. So a little bit over 11 years ago, and on April 24th in 2013 in Japan. Iron Man was released May 3rd, 2013. So a lot of this pulls directly from the MCU, or at least I feel like the characterizations, the character models. Now, obviously, the MCU took it from other comics. We're not going to eat our own tail, Hilbert. We're saying that this was one of those things we talk often about, synergy, right? This idea that if someone is watching a comic book property and they're not too familiar with the characters, when they do want to pick up a comic book, they're going to want to see the version that they just saw in the comic book. And I feel this movie, this was that, right? Like if you saw Iron Man 1 and 2 and even 3, you can recognize these people, their character designs, who they work for, all that kind of stuff. Yep.
Like literally it's Tony Stark. It's literally Robert Downey Jr. animated.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I feel like Nick Fury's giving him crap from MCU stuff, MCU events, right? Like all that stuff. I'm just like, this is the same kind of stuff I'm used to. The feature takes place on Earth 101001. That version of the Marvel Universe. And, you know, it's also the setting for that next film that we'll be covering next week, Avengers Confidential, Black Widow and Punisher. That's basically the setup there. If you haven't seen Rise of the Technovores, I'd go out and search it out. It's a 90 minute. It's quick. I'm loving these. Last week we covered Punisher 89, and that's 90 minutes. Bro, so hilarious. That movie is hilarious. Possibly on purpose, but really, really, really funny.
Check it out.
But yeah, we'll go ahead and we'll get right into Rise of Technovore. So spoiler, spoiler, spoilers, people. We're getting into the nitty-gritty.
Yeah, man.
So our story starts with Tony and Rhodey racing in Utah in their respective armors on their way to a launch. As Iron Man and War Machine streak across the blue sky, they trash talk each other, showing how comfortable they are with one another. Turns out Stark Industries is set to launch a new satellite dedicated to Howard, Tony's father, and it would give S.H.I.E.L.D. the chance to observe everyone 24/7 in case of danger. Some have called this an invasion of privacy, but Tony maintains that the satellites will not infringe on people's rights. It's just there to prevent disasters. And I'm like, brother, I Ultron. I'm like,
bro, I'm like, Project Insight. So like, this is like this is a Nexus event, like thing in every universe. The Shield launches a satellite.
Edith, everywhere. It's Edith. Yeah, right. It's like it's the whole yeah. So I'm just like, But again, this was 11 years ago. So we've now gone through all the repercussions of this of this kind of stuff. So hearing them talk about like, hey, what's the worst that could happen? I'm like, what happens here is basically the plot of Brother Eye in a lot of ways, you know, where Batman goes out of his way to build this thing. And then, you know, oh my God, I gotta check real quick because the OMAX are bio nanite things too. Remember they're bio tech.
Yeah. Stuff.
Oh, Tony.
Bio nanotech. Yeah.
But yeah, I thought this started off pretty funny. And again, this is the kind of relationship my War Machine and Iron Man have, whether it be in comics, whether it be in film. What do you think about this opener? These two guys just kind of roughhousing in their respective armors.
I appreciated it. It showcased not just the animation quality, like that showing that it's really high, but just showing their camaraderie and their friendship throughout the years, that they still are Tony and Rhodey, still friends since high school, no matter where they are, no matter what they're doing, that it showcased that. And I appreciated it because, you know, outside of Avengers stuff, like it's showing also what they're doing when they're not part of a team. You know, they still have their own lives. They're still like, you know, he's still an Air Force pilot. Tony is still a businessman of a giant, like, you know, tech corporation conglomerate. You know, they're fighting villains all day, every day. They still have other things to do.
Yeah. And they maintain their characteristics, you know, regardless of whether they're fighting a monster or whether they're taking a joyride through Utah. One of the things I dug about this was when War Machine is basically like, bro, I am a pilot. Like, why are you trying to outpilot a pilot? Like, you're just a billionaire who built these suits, but I like went to school for this. And then Tony just does like some fuckery and basically, you know, gets the lead. And it's this idea that you can't count Tony out, even if he's not, you know, a 100% proficient on a certain thing. Give him a day and give him a book. And what is it? When did you become an expert at this? This morning.
Like last night.
Oh, yeah, last night, pillow talk. So as Tony and Rhodey descend on the launch site, several armored suits armed by mercenaries called the Raiders attack the base. Tony deduces that they are there for the satellite, and elsewhere Nick Fury rallies the troops to head to that location. One of the mercenaries tells Tony that the person who sent them has eclipsed him in terms of technology. Meanwhile, an unknown assailant with a techno-organic armored suit infiltrates the control room and kills everyone inside. Tony arrives, but it's no use. The stranger is too powerful. He makes quick work of Tony and launches the satellite. This is all is lost. Like, they started off all fun, everyone racing and stuff, and now we have full-blown murder. It's been 10 minutes in. This is full-blown murder. Our guy took everybody out. But one of the things that I dug about this as well is that I didn't know Nick Fury was in this. So like, as soon as like they cut and you just see the eye patch and the head, I'm like, wow. And I'll look it up here. And maybe this says more about, you know, people being generic more than anything else. But I thought the guy did a great Nick Fury. I thought the voice actor for this did a pretty good Sam Jackson, I guess is what I should say, right? He's not doing Nick Fury. He's doing Sam Jackson. I thought he did a real good job. A real good job on that. Let me see. We're talking about...
I was really intrigued about the villain's armor. You know, spoiler later, who's going to be... who's behind the armor. I'm not going to reveal it now, but it was really like, whoa, like, yo, they should do this live action. Like, there's so much storytelling here. Like, he had, like, he's in this, and that suit, that's, like, almost from the comics, like, the superior Iron Man armor. With
I was thinking Bleeding Edge stuff. Yeah, I was thinking, like, literally, like, liquid metal, you know, coming and repairing and all that kind of stuff. We're in a world now, right? We have more and more wearable tech than ever. Between eye watches and now we got those Google Visor things and all that. So we're going to move away from what we perceive to be the clunky tech that we've gotten. We've only gotten sleeker, things have only gotten smaller. We think about laptops, cameras, phones, all that kind of stuff. So it only makes sense that they would look forward into the future. I mean, this is even based on a villain, I want to think, that's 10 years prior to this film even coming out. So, like, I think in the 90s it was just real buzzword to be like nanites, you know, like nanites. It's just nanites, you know, it's just microscopic robots, you don't know anything about it, so just don't look into it, it's just nanites,
right?
Yeah, but this villain in this, as you were saying, what's interesting about him in this portrayal, like right here, is that there seems to be a almost like a lack of care. He's quite carefree walking through this thing to set the satellite up. He's quite he's not stabbing people with anger. He's not doing villain monologue stuff. This is all very cold and very matter of fact. And his ability to just waltz in and stuff. And then he has like a very creepy looking, I mean, would you call it a mask, a helmet? I mean, the suit's what it is, but like, it does not have human features, is what I'll say.
Like, right. It's very alien looking in origin almost.
Right, which is a bit of a breadcrumbs to where that trail is going to lead, but yeah, it just almost makes you feel about, like, even though they're walking tanks, the Iron Man suit looks quite friendly. Like, you can tell eyes and a mouth, right? He doesn't need a mouth. What does he need a mouth for? But he has a mouth on it, eyes and a mouth. He even has like little cheekbones, cheekbones and stuff. So it's made to look human, it's made to look friendly, but this is completely different than that. And it's like generating these balls of techno mass that just seemingly disperse and like almost like termites just completely devour anything that they touch. They're almost like a I almost said it. I almost said they're almost like a techno-organic virus. Too much X-Men, bro. I've been on that. Too much X-Men.
Man, too much X-Men stuff. Never have too much X-Men. Never.
That's true. And also, it should be noted, like, we just saw Iron Man basically, shoot past War Machine. Even when these the Raiders show up, he manages to take down a couple of them, but this stranger, he's got nothing for. Like, this guy, he's got no smoke for him.
He's he was completely outclassed. Speed, strength, power, energy, weapons.
And what's ironic is that later on, when it's revealed who this is, he goes to great lengths to, or not goes to great lengths, he believes, Tony, that this is all a revenge plot. But even when you look back at this, he could have killed Tony right then and there. Yeah. Tony wasn't on his mind. And he says later on, like, oh, yeah, you did do that. My fault. Like, but that's not why I'm here. I guess I could get you for that, too. But that's not why I'm here. I like when a mystery, you can follow the breadcrumb trails back. You know, it all makes sense. You're not like, oh, well, why, if he wanted to kill him, why didn't he kill him here? That kind of stuff. The stranger threatens Tony and then makes an explosive exit. As Tony tries to find him, War Machine lets him know that he's nearby, but Rhodey is seemingly killed by another massive bioweapon explosion. I'm like, damn.
Right? It's like, he gets yeeted in every universe, just comics to animation to movies. He just, Rhodey having a bad day.
And simultaneously, this is an anime thing, right? I was just thinking about this as I'm describing this scene. But the idea of like an explosion literally lighting up the entire screen, lighting up the whole character, and then,
they just pan out and show the destruction.
Yeah. Like literally white encompassing the entire character to almost show like there's just dust. Like literally the pure force of this has just reduced everything to rubble. So I'm like, yeah, damn. Tony parses through the rubble and can't find Rhodey. Suddenly, Natasha Romanoff, aka Black Widow, shows up and tells Tony that Nick Fury has tasked her to bring him to the helicarrier. As Tony reflects on the death of War Machine, he also briefs Fury on his interactions with the Stranger. Fury and Stark argue over red tape, and defying Nick outright, Tony flies away, hoping to strike first. Nick explains there's rules to stuff like this, so Fury sends fighter pilots to take Tony down. Through creative means, Iron Man evades Fury and his forces, but has Natasha on his tail. He disables her aircraft and flies away. This reminded me of Civil War,
A
where
little bit.
Cap's like, you know what, I'm done with this. He just jumps out the window, and they're like, get him! And he's got to take down a Quinjet or two, and he's got to get past everybody. I wonder if any of this makes Tony and Shield be like, we need to up our gear.
Every time, because when he goes on the escape, he just kind of makes them look foolish, makes their tech look like not as good as his. Even though they sent like mass amounts of robots and jets after him, it was kind of, pointless. It's Iron Man.
Now here's the
He
thing.
probably made all this stuff for you.
Here's the thing, hey Rob, because I was trying to discern this for my second watch. Were there people in those crafts? Was
You know
he
what? That is a good
taking down
question.
arm manned crafts and crashing them and stuff? Because I feel like a couple of them, they actively show pilots behind the old steering wheel. I guess there's a better word for that in an aircraft. But I'm like, is he killing? Is it killing people? But yeah, and I like this idea of Tony on the run. He's usually the one by the book. So this also kind of reminds me of when he like ran away in Civil War and was like, all right, I'm just gonna walk back here and put on my suit and head over to Siberia. Still spooked by the stranger in armor, Tony heads to Pepper Potts for help looking for the tech on the black market. Fury hopes to use the satellite to find and apprehend Iron Man, who has gone rogue. Pepper fingers AIM as the people who have been working in the shadows to research dangerous and illegal technologies, but she's able to find the coordinates to their research facility in Karachi. So Tony gets ready to head over there for a chat. Unfortunately, Nick Fury arrives in a helicarrier to apprehend Tony. Stark pretends to surrender, but uses his briefcase suit to disable his robot captors and successfully escapes. Again.
Dope transition. I like how he transitioned into a suit versus when he did in Iron Man 2. Like the briefcase suit will always be a classic staple of Iron Man, like always.
And again, this was something just introduced in Iron Man 2 to those who may have not been huge Iron Man fans. So when you see the suitcase here in this, you already, you connect the dots. You're already like, all right, two and two. I totally know where this is going. So I thought that was well done. I thought the action of just him taking out those mandroids is what I believe that they were called, one by one, absolutely ridiculous. I wonder if the difference between this and a successful apprehension of Tony Stark is lethal force.
Yeah, that or an EMP. Yeah.
Or an EMP. Yeah, already. I was about to say, just unplug him. What are you doing? What are you doing, Fury? But what I also like in this is that when Tony's talking to Pepper about this tech, he's spooked. Like this is tech beyond him. He's absolutely scared. Like he doesn't know where it would come from, how it does work. All he knows is when he tried his efforts against it, couldn't scratch the thing.
Nada.
And that would bug out the guy who can literally learn anything overnight. And AIM is always up to no good. Those guys should never be trusted. Who funds them? Why are they always allowed to do? I know MODOK at one point was like the head of them, right?
Yeah. Like
The
AIM's
beekeepers.
history is AIM's history is so weird because like at one point they were like how Hydra was like the science division of the Nazis, then AIM became like the science division of Hydra, and then it just broke off.
Advanced Idea Mechanics. Nice name. I just wish they didn't have so much blood on their hands when it comes to stuff like this. So One Unabeam later, and Nick Fury has lost his target again. So he calls in Hawkeye and Black Widow. Hoping to get through to Tony, Nick Fury warns Pepper that the billionaire may be in over his own head. I liked that part because it made Nick Fury, in my eyes, no longer an antagonist. He's just like, yo, I'm just trying to rein his ass in because this is about to get crazy. It's not right. Like, oh, no, I'm not trying to listen. It's not General Ross, right? Like, I'm not trying to listen to anything. We just need to arrest him, and it is what it is. Like, he tells Pepper, like, yo, your homeboy tripping. Like, I'm not the cops here. I'm not trying to, you know, arrest him just to arrest him. I'm actually trying to save his life. As this is going on, we have several scenes that cut to our stranger, who seems to want to use the power of the Howard to take control over every piece of tech in the world. Hoping to liberate all mankind, the stranger sets his sights on the Stark industry satellite. In Karachi, the Punisher and his liberal use of bullets lay waste to the participants in an illegal deal between AIM and a terrorist group. So this is another moment where I'm like, oh, only anime, only anime. The carnage, the blood, though, just the cinematography of a man gunning down a bunch of people in an illegal deal. Punisher's never looked cooler in animation. Like, I just think he just looks really, really cool. His design in this looks really, really cool. Norman Reedus is the ruler cool as Daryl Dixon. So you just pair those two things together, and that's great. And yeah, like, without any sort of hesitation, just as soon as the money is presented, as soon as the illegal goods are presented, Frank is out there and bullets are flying. Did you know Frank was in this, or did you remember Frank was in this? And what do you think about this introduction of the Punisher?
I remembered that he was in this, and I am never mad about seeing my boy Punisher.
Hey, one badge, two badge, baby.
Yeah, Penny and Dom. But like, yes, like, Punisher deserves to be in anime, because with anime, like, you can, like I said before, you can get away with so much. You can see, like, the emotion on characters' faces. The cinematography is on point. Like, you see the bullets whizzing through and hitting their target. Like, you can get away with a lot of animation, and Punisher deserves to be in anime form every time. Like, just hit the lines, the voicing, it's Punisher. Yes, yeah. Give him the anime treatment.
And I mean, the one man war on crime, like, that's, you know, if he had superpowers, he'd be, you know, that's a Shonen Jump thing, right? Like, yep. The one rebel against everyone. But another thing, like you were just saying, and again, I'm going to speak highly of this stuff because you guys can't see this right now. But yeah, like, they'll have Punisher sitting there and gunning people down. They'll cut to him, and you can see the weapon recoil with every shot. You can see the empty chambers coming out of the side. You can see with every pull of the trigger, a muzzle flash. And then that muzzle flash is being reflected in the face of the Punisher. You understand? Like, all the physics are there. It all, and your mind just connects it all as this is real. The action is kinetic. It all comes together, where sometimes you got to turn your brain off and be like, okay, everyone's shooting each other with lasers. I don't know if they burn. I don't know if they push. I don't know if they knock you out. I don't know what's going on here. You know, but right. This is like, oh, no, I know these are bullets. They're doing everything I know bullets to do, and they're working exactly as Frank wants them to. Very, very well done here. Punisher tries to kill the main AIM guy, but Tony arrives and spares his life in exchange for information on his phone. Hacking in, he gets a comprehensive list of people AIM has been doing illegal dealings with, and is shocked when he sees an Ezekiel Stain on the list. The Punisher says he has a file on Stain, and they head to his safe house nearby. Do you know much about Ezekiel Stain?
I knew nothing of Ezekiel Stain. I just know, I'm like, oh, he's related to Obadiah, and that's it.
Real love for, like, real biblical or you know, pompous names, right? Obadiah, like, Ezekiel.
What's going Jeremiah.
On Jeremiah Stain. I've heard of Zeke Stain being a villain in recent Marvel comics. I would say, like, as maybe like 5, 6, 7 years ago. Him being behind some stuff here and there, but I wasn't privy to this version of the character. And what's ironic about it, and we spoke a little bit about it in the beginning, his origin seems to still be tied to Obadiah, right? Like our Obadiah the Ironmonger, and how he went out in Iron Man 1. This is not like a when they reveal all this kind of stuff, it's not like a, oh, you gotta, that's his comic book origin, you gotta read the comics for that. It's like, no, I saw that movie. That's how his dad died. He got blown up. So I thought that was a really cool cut. Again, like merging what we already know, if you are a fan of Iron Man, and millions became fans, you know, in 2008.
Oh, yeah.
And taking what they know from there and kind of just extending it to some stuff they may not know, like bringing in AIM, bringing in Zeke. So they, yeah, they, whoop. Did that the Punisher says he has a file. Yep, they discuss Zeke being Obadiah Stane's son, who was believed to have died in a plane accident. Now, I feel like Punisher deduces that Shane, that Stane used his master's fortune to evade death. Is that what he was like getting at?
Oh, I thought he was like using his fortune like to create tech to extend his life.
Right. So do you think, like, just tinfoil hat here? Do you think, like, there was a plane crash, he did get hurt, and then they just funneled all the money into keeping him alive and made him kind of what he became? Or is this a situation he faked his death so he could become this? Where do you think the
Ooh.
you get what I'm saying? Like, was there really an
Yeah.
incident? Is it really, the chicken or the egg kind of stuff? Was there really an incident? And Zeke is kind of not all there because he's literally being kept alive by machinery, or was this always a plot? Was Zeke always going to come down on Tony? Was, did he fake his death so he can hide in the woods or whatever? I think it's interesting, but I think it's also kind of funny that Punisher knows all this, but Tony doesn't. It's
Right?
like, it's the son of your like arch nemesis. I'm just saying, I've seen enough Kill Bill. If push comes to shove and I ever have to accidentally kill somebody on purpose, accidentally on purpose, I have to look for the next of kin because they are gonna find out and
Right?
they will
And
be
the
knocking on my
bloodline.
door. Yes.
They said in Harley Quinn, end the bloodline. Like, you
Oh
do not
my
want
God.
random
That was
people
Harley Quinn,
20 years
right?
from now. Yep. End the bloodline. You don't want people 20 years from now pulling up on your family or your house, just talking about you killed this person in my family. Like, no. And then you
Right.
got like, damn, that's you? Oh, I told you to find me when I was stronger. Look at you. You grown up. Like, no, end the
And yo, when they did that in Harley Quinn, I was, oh, that was bonkers. Some of the craziest stuff I've
bloodline.
ever seen. I just keep thinking about that wolf.
Right.
But he's also, Punisher has also deduced that Zeke has injected his brain with nanobots and has been knee deep in illegal dealings, especially with techno-organics. Fury and Barton and Romanoff head to Karachi, and Nick gives them 40 minutes to complete the mission as they cannot be caught invading international airspace if they are found. That's a huge ass helicarrier to hide, bro. Like, I feel like, yeah, doing too much. But yeah, Frank and Tony gear up after Tony realizes that Zeke may have inherited a penthouse in a hotel in Shanghai that was formerly a Stark Industries research center. Before those two could leave, Hawkeye and Black Widow arrive, and Tony is disabled by Clint's trick arrows. They get over on him pretty well.
Oh yeah, that shield training did kick in, taking them down, or just
Yeah,
incapacitating them.
I mean, like, I love whenever Iron Man gets choked because I'm like, how does that work? Is it like armor up here, armor down here, and under armor in the neck? Like, is that why he can't breathe? Or would it? Like, can you choke Iron Man? Because she like restrains him around his neck and like
That
pulls him back. And I'm like, is it really choking him? Is it
is a
choking the
really
robot?
good question.
Very strange. But yeah, they just kind of like they use some trick arrows, they disable him, and then they kind of tie him up. The two have Tony on the ropes until Frank shows up and tosses a grenade as a distraction. Castle leads them on a high-speed chase, and although Widow and Hawkeye are relentless and proficient and manage to disable the vehicle, the Punisher uses a flashbang to get the jump on them and get them to drop their weapons long enough for Tony to get away. He heads to Shanghai immediately while Frank rides off in the sunset in secret.
And he did say something that was going to echo in the next thing we're going to cover.
Oh, is that the
If next time I see him, I'm gonna
Chron
put a bullet
yeah, chron chronologically, that's next, right?
in
The
his
Avengers Confidential. I love that. I love whenever other heroes talk about Frank, and it's always like that psychopath. He's working with Punisher, like that guy.
Right? Every time from Daredevil, Black Widow, Iron Man, like Tad, Daredevil, like everyone, when it comes to Punisher, it's like, do we have to?
Right. And you would think someone like Black Widow, especially, maybe not Clint, but someone like Black Widow would get it, right? Like Frank just doesn't have a boss, but she does everything Frank does, but with a boss. The boss tells her what to do, so I guess it's not her fault, or she doesn't have to take full accountability. But yeah. And I like this chase. I like this little Jeep. It's a Jeep, and
Nice little car chase.
racing down the desert. I thought that was well done. Again, great animation.
Right, and it definitely highlight their skills, like the combat, the close combat, CQC with Black Widow, and then Hawkeye's just precision with the bow and arrow through shooting through the wall. That
Yeah,
Hawkeye at his best.
that's what the three, right? With the three arrows, and like right through that little
Yeah,
brick, that brick
like
opening.
through a small brick moving at like 80, 90 miles an hour. Like,
Yeah.
all right, Clint, I see you, bro.
And then again, stylistically, you're following these arrows, right? Like he'll shoot them and you're following them as they take out a tire or, nick the back seat or whatever. I like when Widow and Hawkeye are shown to be this proficient. I think Hawkeye gets a lot of jokes on him because some people think that he's not, all there or shouldn't be on the team of literal gods. But I do think he does a good job in a pinch and did one here. Yeah, I love that Frank's like muttering under his own breath, like this is all bullshit. I get roped into this or whatever. And I like that he got away. I didn't want him to get captured. So it's revealed that Zeke Stain is working alongside. Now, help me link this up as well. Throughout the film, this woman is just called Sasha, right? There's no big bum 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 reveal. Is there a reveal later on? Does she come back? Does this technical character come back in anything that you remember?
No. I mean, there was a Technivore on the Avengers Mightiest Assemble, like Avengers Mightiest Heroes cartoon, but they didn't mention
Yeah.
no Sasha, no Ezekiel. Like Technivore was like its own entity created by AIM. Like,
So she's listed in the credits as Sasha Hammer.
oh, Justin's daughter.
That's what I thought. But she's the daughter
Okay.
of Justine Hammer, which I believe might have been, I don't know if that's his daughter or his sister or something like that. She's the daughter of Justine Hammer and the Mandarin.
So the daughter of Justin Hammer's daughter.
And the Mandarin, so that's kind of big. And
Wow.
she's just played up to be like this sort of invisible hand kind of puppeteering Zeke.
Like Ezekiel, yeah. I wonder if this, I was gonna go somewhere like bigger. Like, was she just like gonna get all the descendants of like, or just all the descendants of Iron Man's Rogues Gallery and just start getting together and start messing with them?
And I'm because when he said, oh, like this is Sasha, they just mentioned the word Sasha. I'm like, Sasha, what? That doesn't ring a bell. And they wouldn't just name somebody just to name them, so I look it up and it's Sasha Hammer. So the whole time I am waiting, no pun intended, for the hammer to fall, like for it to boom, 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 be revealed. Oh, yeah, but it never does. And she's still around alive in the end, and she kind of plays a role in the end, depending on how you interpret that scene. Which is why I was like, did they pick this back up? Did it continue? Did she become the big bad for all the Avengers or something? But I guess not. Interesting. What do you think about the little like bonsai meditation area there? The all white room with a couple bonsai trees.
It screamed, I don't want to say culty, but it screamed like you're a bad guy. Because only bad, like I don't like people do this. Like they're like completely uncouth, they're calm, collected all the time. They have all white, clean, pristine things. Like there's something wrong with you, unfortunately. Like that may seem normal, but it's not normal.
Yeah, and they speak in absolutes, like they know exactly what's gonna happen and they know exactly how to get there, kind of
I was
stuff.
getting Empire vibes.
Oh yeah. They all the whole thing is sparkly clean white. It's like, oh, what's going on here? The Other part about this, like I said, it just feels like she's kind of coaching him through this. She has the book and she's the one that's kind of giving him the quotes and talking, sort of kind of biblically about all this kind of stuff. But yeah, it's they confront Tony confronts Zeke, who tells him that he was never hiding. When Tony asks if he was out for revenge, Zeke says that he's not that close to his father anyway, so this isn't a blood feud. Instead, it's Tony's tech that Zeke is interested in. That's another thing I wanted to say, that you have all these scenes as well where I don't know if it's stylistically or I don't know if it's something that Ezekiel is seeing himself, but he sees almost like bacteria at a molecular level. Like it's just quick flashes as if you're looking through a it's not a magnifying glass, telescope.
Microscope.
Your microscope, microscope, microscope. Like you're looking through a microscope and you're just watching cells and stuff go. I want to believe that that's just going on in his head all the time. Like he just sees building blocks of tech, sort of everywhere. But it's an effective tool in making him cold and distant. Because you're like, what is that? Why is what's being shown here? It just is jarring. And we spoke a little bit off air about this, but one of the things they nail in anime that we'll get to here in a bit is horror. They're really, really
Oh,
good. They're really, really good at nailing horror and body horror, especially. I just look at the Titans in Attack on Titan. Like, just look
oh,
at
my God,
how horrifying,
that and Parasite, just the body horror is real when it comes to anime.
They do. That's what I'm saying. With the liberal use of violence and then body horror, like this feels like elevated content because you know all the stuff that was stricken from American cartoons because of the FCC and various other agencies, Moms Against Cartoons probably or something. So I feel like we never got to hit our zenith when it came to animation, and then we just went to 3D. Like we just went to like Pixar-esque, and then we kind of just quit. But I do think there's still done in 2D animation, and that's why anime is kicking ass all over the world because people are still inventing and still getting better, especially now that it's digital. You think like people would really lean into this whole 2D stuff, but people wanted to look as realistic as possible now, which is almost antithetical to animation because animation can do things that you can't do in real life, so you shouldn't really be going towards realism with it. You should let it be as wonky as it wants to be. For example, I think a very huge example of this is Spider-Verse, the Spider-Verse series. A lot of that is style over, not over substance, but style. Just taking priority in the sense of like style over realism is what I'll say. Does it matter that he's falling off a building and you see you see the word ah written as he falls? It's to invoke those emotions. It's to let you see everything as if it was on a page. And I think animation works better when it's trying less to be a one for one, for with reality, because we could do that whenever we can, we can make a million shows where it's just people. But if you have animation, you can really start to test the limits of that kind of stuff, when you're not actively trying to just make regular people, stuff
It's
like
really
that.
just like testing like one's imagination and how much you can get away with on the like the each frame in the anime,
Yeah. Considering that each frame is an individual picture that was labored over, that was thought over, designed, colored, right? All that kind of stuff, and you put a million of them together, and you get something like this. But every detail is painstaking. If you got a guy, and he has white socks on underneath his pants in a real movie, you don't know. No one needs to know. No one cares. But if that happens with a comic book character, you have to draw the white socks. You have to make the line to the thing. Like everything in here, nothing in here is by mistake. All of this is deliberate. And so, if you're going to make deliberate choices, make wild ones, and people will remember you for it. They will remember you. So, using bioorganic nanites, Zeke disables Iron Man's armor at the molecular level and keeps him frozen in place. That was my interpretation of what happened. What did you think happened? Does that sound right?
Yeah, he just basically hacked his armor, took control over it, because with the nanites, nanotechnology, like you could do anything with it.
Yes, you can. What are we gonna do in for the next act? Nanites. Just writing right now. It's just someone who has nanites and he just keeps underlining it. Nanites. What don't you get? Yeah, but how did he nanites?
Nanite.
Nanotechnology. You don't understand it. So Zeke gets biblical and says that he has ascended past humanity, considering himself the wind. Stain hopes to create a brand new technological world, but this old organic one needs to die first. His plan is to replace humanity with his new technology, utilizing the technology on the Howard satellite. Zeke dons his futuristic armor as Tony wriggles in pain. He tries to fight back when he has minor control over his weapon systems, but Zeke's nanotech is just too unrelenting. It swarms Tony's suit, causing him immense pain. But suddenly, Zeke also seems to be suffering from some external pain as well for some reason. Did you have any thoughts at the time of what would be going on with Zeke here?
I when he started going full-blown God complex, I was like, okay, so we're finally getting into the third act. Cool. But my initial like reaction was, what set him on this path? Like, who put him on this path? Like, you're still human. You were born. You bleed. What makes you think that you can ascend? It had to be the saucer chick, like, or like his dad eating him something like when he was younger.
That's I think you're really getting to the nitty gritty here. While we perceive that, well, we all, and when I mean like us watching and then Tony thought that this was like a blood feud for Obadiah, it kind of is still about Obadiah. It's just not about Obadiah and Tony. It's about Obadiah and Ezekiel. We'll get to a part where he kind of just has a memory of him not being perfect enough for his father, and when you consider that he was not perfect enough for his father, and then ultimately his father failed to beat Tony Stark, he would have to then evolve past his dad to beat Tony Stark, and then past everyone else if he wanted to be on top, be perfect and stuff. It's quite literally that Simple Plan song, perfect. He just sorry he can't be perfect. He's just he just he's trying his damnedest.
And in the process,
Tony's,
he corrupts himself.
speaking of Nanite Ex Machina, it's just right up th it's right up there in this film with Arc Reactor Ex Machina. That arc reactor can seemingly do anything.
Magic.
It's the Unabomber that helped take out all the mandroids, right? When he took them all down. And now
Might
he's
look
like,
like a Kamehameha.
he's like, all I gotta do is shoot this thing at the Technovores and they all go, and they all do. And so once the smoke clears, Zeke faints, his armor, dissolves seemingly. And Black Widow and Hawkeye arrive to apprehend Tony. They bring him in and a restrained Zeke aboard the helicarrier. And we see how Zeke's mind is haunted by the harsh and unrealistic expectations of his father. This is what we were talking about before, where he's like, you got a 95? Like, come on, this is not good enough. You got to be smarter. You got to be better. I'm like, God, that's got to be haunting. I mean, as haunting as him quite literally making a weird version. Remember when he brought his dad into the conversation?
Little bit.
He's like,
That
he like created some weird tech version of his dad to come in and talk to them during the conversation. Extremely strange. It is aboard the helicarrier that Tony finds out that Rhodey is still alive and recovering aboard the vessel. While alive, he hasn't woken up yet, something that shakes Tony up. I thought this scene was probably the most heartfelt. People, I looked up reviews of this, and people are, hemming and hawing over maybe the dialogue not being great or certain voice actors are not digging. But in this, I've truly felt the heartbreak when he's like, "Hey, I'll let you win the next race. Just pick a model, and I'll get it for you." Like when he's doing all that kind of bargaining, for like, "Please wake up," kind of stuff. I don't know why that rang true. Why do you think that scene worked?
Because that really it really shows how human these characters really are, like at their core, that they are still human, no matter how fantastical the feat that they do, or no matter how insurmountable the odds that they all go up against. At the end of the day, they are still human and they have those real emotions.
Yeah, I think that's almost a theme of the entire film, is this idea that because Tony has this humanity and almost more to lose, you know, he has to go above and beyond to accomplish his mission here. If it was a case of like, oh well, who cares? You know, the world gets destroyed, it is what it is. If he was as cold and callous, if he had nothing to lose, just like Ezekiel, then he wouldn't. You know, none of this would faze him, but every loss in this bothers him. He doesn't want to lose Pepper. He doesn't want to lose Nick. He doesn't want to lose Rhodey in this instance. And that means he has to work twice as hard to get anything accomplished. So suddenly an alarm rings, signifying that the helicarrier is being hacked into. And I'm like, oh, he wanted to be brought aboard the ship.
Right, I'm like,
I'm
oh,
like,
Trojan horse.
didn't you see Avengers 1? Damn it. He wanted to
Do
get captured.
you not know the Battle of the Trojans? Do you not know history?
Doesn't I feel like Gordon says that too in Dark Knight, right? Damn it, he wanted
Yeah.
to get captured. He wanted us to lock him up. So I'm like, ah, damn. So it doesn't take long to figure out it's Ezekiel's techno voice that have taken over the airship. Speaking of Ezekiel, he seems to have escaped his holding cell, and the Technovores are en route to take over the entire Howard satellite, therefore having control over every military satellite in space. With the entirety of that arsenal, Stane could very well destroy mankind. Using his arc reactor, Tony rids the helicarrier of the Technovores. Again, just pulls it out and like this thing can help save everything. He uses his arc reactor, and it rids the helicarrier of the Technovores. And Stane goes around hunting and disposing of Natasha and Clint. Zeke confronts Tony and Fury in the control room, and Tony tries to get through to him by invoking his dad. He's like, yo, come on, man. Like, your dad, he's all right, I think, kind of. He was just a dad, and you were just a son. And I'm like, you could do better than this, Tony. Like, you could come back. There needs to be a little bit more here. But Zeke's just too far gone to no avail. And you're like, oh my God, Zeke is a monster. Until. Suddenly, Zeke mutates painfully as the Technovore not only takes over his entire body but has rebelled against its creator. And it just visualized as these massive, what would you call them, masses, tumors?
Yeah, like growths, tumor, like yeah, growth, just drop these mass growths of like just like I'm gonna say like Clayface mid transformation.
Yeah, it's horrifying. And then Zeke just starts to say, like, I can't feel anything. I can't see anything. His eyes roll to the back of his head. And I'm like, what movie am I watching right now? Again, if I would have been a child and I would have been watching this in theaters, I would have probably cried. If I would have been a small child, I'm like, what is going on? When did this turn into an absolute horror film? Because again, we thought some of the stuff early on was a bit horrific. This is when it gets full on horror movie. At one point, Natasha and Clint are just walking around, and it is a horror movie, right? Like, where is he? He's in the shadows, and he's almost taunting them, like, "Hey, come find me," kind of stuff. And I'm like, "Oh, this is not. None of this is good." But yeah, again, body horror only as anime could do it. Absolutely killing the game when it comes to that design, because I was freaked the hell out. The Technovore, now as one monstrous being, is seemingly impenetrable and kills all the shield operatives who try to take it down. Tony's suit recharges so he could take on the monstrosity head on, and it takes him all the way to Shanghai. And boom, 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 Rhodey wakes up. No matter what Tony does, the Technovore is just too powerful and malleable. Like, it's literally liquid metal, so like it just moves out of the way, or it takes all the impact and then turns into something else. No matter what Tony's doing, it has an answer for it. It just adapts. It's too fast. The helicarrier is disabled and falls out of the sky. I thought that would have been a bigger deal, but it kind of just like crash lands in Shanghai.
Right, they didn't really show, you know, like when it comes to, they could have showed a little bit more horror when it comes to that destruction, like from the civilian point of view, because like that
Yeah.
helicarrier hit hella buildings falling
Yes, it
down.
did. Yes. And then it like drug, right? And it still had momentum. It drug
Yeah.
all the way across the city until it had to stop. But I'm like, whoa, what? Yeah, what happened there? Everyone on is fine. Everyone on is cool. You're all good. Iron Man is beaten mercilessly. I mean, he's like literally pulled from each limb and then just punched in the face repeatedly.
Completely ragdolled.
My man is ragdolled, and he's almost outright killed when War Machine shows up to save the day. Here comes Rhodey. He lays his own suppressor fire and distracts the Techno Beast long enough for Iron Man to get his bearings, but the duo notices something is up with their enemy. Suddenly, the armor cracks open and a white amorphous blob just comes out of it and floats into the sky. It's very hard to take notes on this portion of it because it has to be seen to believe.
Right.
This biomass, calling itself Technovore, now can speak. Everyone can hear it, I guess, through machinery. And it's like, I am now free. Prepare for the next phase of the end of humanity. And I'm like, this is the worst Apple commercial I've ever seen. But yeah, it just goes to this guy. And I love that Rhodey's first reaction is to like shoot everything he has at it. Like he's throwing missiles and stuff. And Tony's like, no, Rhodey, no. He goes, what do you want me to do? He goes, bullets and stuff, don't waste bullets. He goes, I don't know what else to do. I'm just gonna keep shooting at it. Which is like,
when in doubt, try to kill it with fire.
Bro, that's a comic book movie school of suppressive fire, right? Just keep, yep. It's actively not hurting it. You can see that it's not hurting it, but just keep your finger on that trigger. But yeah, and again, Rhodey just woke up. Like, I don't blame this man. He literally just woke. When he went to bed, there was a bunch of like nanite bots that he kind of had to take care of in the desert. When he woke up, there is now a humongous mass of technology floating above the city of Shanghai, plugging itself into any outlet, any internet, any machine in its general direction for miles, and also trying to connect to a satellite and then use that to destroy the world. So I can see if Rhodey's a bit touchy in this moment. I don't blame my man. So this is also kind of funny. Like, it's funny in hindsight as I read the notes, right? Because this is a very all is lost moment. You know, he connects to the satellite, it's all reaching, and it's not even like a secret thing or surprise thing. Tony just goes, oh, wait a minute. I built a back door into this thing. So part of me wonders, does that mean he could have done this like way back? Like way, way, way back. Like, if the satellite's the thing that they want, I know how to back door and like shut it down. And then it's just funny to me because it's literally something he remembers. Like, oh yeah. Wait a minute.
Tony.
I made a backdoor into that thing. So yeah, he remembers that he built a backdoor into Howard's programming. He gets Pepper to activate it, as it was her voice he used to create the backdoor. I thought when I first watched this scene that it was romantic. On second thought, it's not all that romantic. As a matter of fact, the idea that she says the only thing she wants in this entire world is a vacation is kind of sad, Tony. Treat your workers better, bro. You're Elon Musk in this thing, and no one wants to work under those conditions. But quite literally, imagine asking the love of your life, like, what do you want more than anything? And the first answer is a vacation. Like, I'm like, damn. Stressed. My girl stressed. So yeah. Tony uses the back door to hack his way back in temporarily. He lets himself get caught by the Technovore on purpose and then tells War Machine to blast his arc reactor with the satellite's defense laser before the Technovore can wreak havoc on the world with its other satellites. Although he is hesitant to hurt his friend, War Machine pulls the trigger. This was, they spent their time on this. It's like 10 seconds of like, pull the trigger. I'm not pulling the trigger. Pull the trigger, Rhodey. I'm not doing it, Tony. You can't make me do it. And I'm like, somebody better pull something.
Right.
Technovore is chilling right now. He gonna pull it if y'all don't pull it. So yeah, he eventually pulls the trigger, taking down the Technovore and making it seem like Iron Man sacrificed himself. But surprise, surprise, War Machine swoops in to save the day, and Iron Man lives to fight another day. He and Pepper discuss a well-needed vacation, and elsewhere, Ezekiel Stane is seen in the custody of S.H.I.E.L.D. He is visited by Sasha Hammer, whose words seemingly quote-unquote activate Zeke yet again. The end. What do you think of that ending? Is that, did I get that right?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
He was like not responsive. That's what they're saying. Right? Like, we have him, and he just hasn't said anything for whatever. And then she talks to him with the quotes from the book, and suddenly he's back awake.
Mm. Yeah.
Everyone's also super chill about like the nanites bringing Rhodey back to life, but then just choosing to be nice. Like they just the Technovores brought him back to life. Like maybe we should keep an eye on old Rhodey. Quite literally, when we see him in the chamber, he has like pieces of shrapnel still in his face.
Right, all in his face, his neck and stuff.
I'm like, someone needs to. Yeah, this man needs some TLC. But yeah, I saw this film. I enjoyed it. Like I said, 90 minutes. It's off in a clip. It doesn't really drag in any place that I could think of. Some of the stuff might get repetitive, like Nick Fury finding Tony like four times. But past that, I really like this story, and I really like Ezekiel Stane as a villain. What do you think?
I like the story a lot as well. Like we can never get enough Iron Man in media, and you know, like I said before, like just the anime style just of mecha suits and mecha-ish suits Iron Man and War Machine, pun intended. Yeah. It just fits.
No, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so I was thinking that we could possibly spend the last part of this podcast discussing characters that could use an anime adaptation.
Oh, yeah. I might have some teams.
You got some teams? I got one team.
I got one team too.
I got one team, so maybe I should start it off. And this is a bit of a softball. This is a bit of a softball. But my one team is The Boys. The Boys in anime. I mean, come on. Like, that level of violence, that level of gratuitousness, the power scaling when you come to guys like Soulja Boy, guys like Homelander, I think just speaks right to this. And then they can kind of even poke fun at America because it's primarily an American show. It's dealing with American capitalism and stuff like that. So, yeah, off the rip, I thought The Boys. I think we've played around with them in animation. I think that even one of those episodes was in anime.
Yeah, right? there's like the spinoff, like, show with, like, each episode being a different cartoon animation style. And it's showing,
Diabolical.
Like, it's just, you know, showcasing the world of... okay. And it's
you thought I was calling it Diabolical?
Yeah, I was like, I forgot the name of it, but like, yeah. I knew like The Boys had a spinoff with the cartoons, and each one had a different animation style. And I think like two, three of the episodes were like in anime format, like just different forms of anime styles.
Yeah, so, yeah, I believe so as well.
So yeah, like, so The Boys can definitely benefit from like the anime treatment.
Yeah. What do you have on your list over there?
Mine was like for the team that deserves to have an anime treatment. Well, I was kind of tied between two. It's the Eternals and X-Force. Ooh. Right? Because like with Fate Stay Night or like your Fate Apocrypha, I feel like a lot of storytelling when it comes to like these biblical characters, which are like, you know, the Eternals are based off of, or biblical characters are based off of them, you know?
Right. Like,
There's a lot of great storytelling in there that can really be, you can get away with a lot in anime form, you know, just Athena's fights and Makari's fights alone would just blow people's minds.
I didn't even think about that. And then you deal with like extinction and like extinction level threats with stuff like Neon Genesis, right? Like there's like bigger than life concepts in some of these animes. And sometimes it feels like the MCU is too small to tackle something like Eternals. That even when we got there and it busted, you know, Marvel Cosmic wide open, people were like, "Let's get back to the Earth. Let's go back to Let's go back to New York." You know, where I felt like they were kind of playing around with some really interesting stuff, and you could just see the Celestials animation, right? Just hovering over these pinball like Earths, you know, and just the cosmic horror of it all being so big in scope in comparison to like, let's say, an ant, but then being an ant to something else that's way bigger, just dormant in the universe. We were talking about how animation can sort of portray things that you may not even be able to kind of think about how it would be portrayed in real life. And so my next pick is, you know, maybe a little bit odd, or some would even say maybe a little bit strange. I think Doctor Strange would be an amazing anime.
Yes, Doctor Strange. Oh my god! And I could, yeah. And it could be this the animation style. I'm trying to think like who what animes deal with magic. So I'm like, I'm thinking like Black Clover, like yeah. who animation style would fit best for Doctor Strange?
Yeah, spells and runes and legend and tradition, and just the magic fights and what all that could be, deities and demons and all that kind of stuff.
Just all the supernatural of it.
Yeah, I mean, you think about some of the biggest or more famous or favorable Doctor Strange runs. That art is ridiculous. Like, it's absolutely unhinged. Yes. Absolutely unhinged to show just how much in a different world he is compared to every other hero. Again, if you're watching a Spider-Man thing, you want it to look as realistic as possible because you've been to New York, so you want it to look like New York and you want him to kind of fit into that scenery. But with Doctor Strange, I mean, think of the dark dimension in anime. Like, what all that could be. What does Dormammu look like in anime? You know, like that kind of stuff, I think, could really, really benefit that character. And also, like, I feel like we've only really got Doctor Strange in service of, right? It's like, we know enough of him so he can hang with the Avengers. And we know enough of him so he can help Spider-Man. And we know enough of him, you know? We're just getting enough of him so that he fits his use in the universe. But what if we just let him go? What if we just let him go and have his own adventures and do his own thing? You can really gain some really, really good and faithful, loyal Doctor Strange fans once they realize the other things that this character is capable of. So yeah, Doctor Strange is my number two.
My number two, I'm going with like a comedy. So I'm probably
Deadpool. I was thinking that. I almost picked Plastic Man. Because I was like one joke man, Plastic Man. We can do kind of like a, you know, but talk to me about your Deadpool adaptation.
Because it just fits the way he breaks the fourth wall. And you know how sometimes animes, the main character will sometimes like cut and just talks to the audience.
Yeah,
it'll fit perfectly with Deadpool. And you can go with any storyline. You can throw in all the cameos, all the crazy zaniness of it all, and the violence, of course. Oh, 100%. And I want Studio MAPPA to handle this.
I'll still say we have not gotten any really impressive katana, you know, sort of choreography. I think anime would tear that up. Him and two katanas tearing up a bunch of Hydra agents. Oh. That'd be amazing.
We haven't got good sword anime Samurai Champloo, you know, Afro Samurai. Like, where's the love for the samurai?
Yeah, and I think that would totally do it. And then of course, every other, you know, every 10 minutes is gonna be him with that big teardrop, embarrassed. With his head right? Down. Like, I can already see that. You know, it's
like, you can see, like all the animation, even though he's wearing a mask, he was still emo. He was like, like you see the red cheeks and all that.
And all that. He would totally kill it in that. That's a great pick. So my last pick, I was kind of thinking like, okay, why did I pick Doctor Strange? Why did I pick the boys? And I'm like, could there be something that kind of is a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B? And it's kind of brought me to like almost an obvious one to me. Spawn.
Yes. In anime.
Like, it's everything you were just talking about with Deadpool, right? All the guns, the chains, you know, the grenades. And then all the stuff I was just talking about with Doctor Strange, with the demons and hell and, you know, this necro force and all that kind of stuff there. Spawn would be a pretty impressive anime. I think it could be really, really, really cool stuff. And again, I think Spawn's one of those people that people know of. They'll point to the film, but there's been hundreds of issues made about this guy. I only know him surface level. I'll be honest. You know, I only really know like his visual, the film, and I've read some comics, but you gotta believe that they go to every corner of where he could go as a character. I mean, I've seen King Spawn, I've seen Gunslinger Spawn, and maybe any one of those could be their own, you know, spin-off into animation or animation. But man, I just think of like Necroforce powered bullets, you know, like, you know, glowing green, shooting through, like everything we just saw from the Punisher here. Yeah, everything we just saw from the Punisher in the film we covered today, but as an emissary from hell. Like, come on, man. Like, come on, Marvel, you paying attention here? Or Image, you paying attention here? If y'all can't do the this rumored for a decade Jamie Foxx Spawn film, then just do it in anime.
It has been a decade, hasn't it?
It probably is less, but it feels like it's been that long, bro. And since Spawn's had a film, it's been 27 years.
Jesus.
Closing it out. Yeah, 2027 will be the 30th anniversary of that. So, yeah, man. Breathe more life into the dead man by giving him his own anime series.
Right. But, you know, my last pick, I decided to go with like a fight anime, because like fight animes just go, the choreography, like the way it shows each move, each kick, each brow of sweat coming off of them. You know, my last character, I chose Shang-Chi and Iron Fist, like a duo, like team up, like type of anime, because Shang-Chi is the master of all martial arts. He's a threat. He one punched that was Iron Fist, but Shang-Chi did it too, actually. I think he took down a helicarrier. Like, yeah. And just from watching, like, you know, Batman's animated films, what was that, Enter the Dragon or Soul of the Dragon?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The fight choreography, like, I want to see that in anime. Like, you can, like, just from, like, you know, Tower of God or God of High School or what's a good fight anime? Like, almost One Punch Man, you know. I don't say that's a good fight anime, but, you know, just the quality of the fights, you know, when they show each punch, each kick, each move, like, you see it, you feel it. You, like, you go, holy shit, like, that was crazy.
The choreography, the physics of it all. I quite got goosebumps when you said Iron Fist. I initially thought Shang-Chi was going to be on my list. At one point, I considered Damian Wayne. Early training, League of Assassins, going to become Robin. I thought that could also work very well. There's like a whole host of like super, like Lady Shiva, you know, really good martial artists. She was in Enter the Dragon stuff there. But when I think of your Iron Fist idea, I immediately jump to the Ed Brubaker run of Iron Fist, where they do that tournament, the Nine Cities tournament, the Heavenly Cities.
The holies.
Come on. Come on. I'd watch that 10 times over whatever they did in live action. Like, what was that? You know?
Like, I read it twice, actually, because, like, it was so good. Like, each holy city has their own holy warrior, and they fight in each tournament. Like, that screams Mortal Kombat.
It's the one time all the realms connect, like, in, like, 80 years or whatever. Like, once every 80 years, they do this one tournament for one winner. That is a shonen plot. you know
dude, tournament arcs go in anime, from Dragon Ball Z to My Hero. Like,
and again, like, I always have felt, and maybe this is because of my fandom for things like the original X-Men animated series, Batman the animated series, Superman the animated series, etc., Spider-Man the animated series, I've always felt like these, that you could use animation to lay the breadcrumbs for major fandom of these characters. Like, you could watch this kind of stuff and kind of like it, and end up at the end of it being like, that's my character, that's my guy. I know his villains, I know his friends, I know, you know what I'm saying? Like, the reason why I have so much Spider-Man and Batman knowledge, more than any other hero out there, is because of those two series. Those two rose galleries presented in front of me. You know, think about how many villains were introduced in those two shows. It's basically a villain in an episode, right?
Yeah.
And so you're dealing with so much lore being spoon-fed to you in the most presentable way as far as animation is concerned, but you're still, it doesn't feel like homework. You're just kind of going through. And then when you read a comic or watch a film adaptation, or even when I watch the Spider-Man films, I'm like, he doesn't have organic webs. I know this because I watched, you know, he's always like, oh, my web shooters are gone. I can't, you know, I'm out of web shooter. I now have knowledge of the lore because it was given to me in animation form. And so you want to talk about two characters that could use a little bit of a boost. I know Shang-Chi had his movie and Iron Fist had his series, but that those could make those characters A-list easily. The new Shang-Chi episode's out. Like, that would be so cool. Bruh. You know, like, oh my God, we got a Shang-Chi episode out. You know, oh, you see the finale for Iron Fist, bro? They really went there. You know, they really did that fight. And I can't believe, like, I can see this happening. So, like, in this world where they're constantly fishing for content and constantly looking for directions to take their IPs, maybe you should look a little bit to the east. They're doing some amazing things over there. They continue to do amazing things over there. And their just attention to detail, their dedication, and their overall style and flair is something that we don't got over here. And that's not something ashamed to admit. I think all of fandom gets better when we all come together. Come on, look at the sort of, aren't they doing a bit of an anime take on some Star Wars content currently? Or wasn't
Oh
there like
yeah,
a,
the
yeah,
Tales
and
of
that's why.
the they're like they had like a whole bunch of episodes in Tales, not Tales of the Jedi, but
It's the other one. I can't remember it. That
Visions,
Tales came up to me too.
Star Wars Visions. Like
Oh, okay,
each like
Visions.
episode was like in a form of anime style.
Right. So again, like there's so much that speaks to that style that we can't do in live action. Take a chance. And I would say take a chance on lesser known characters because you could end up making anyone A tier as the MCU has already proven with their
Yep.
films. You can make anyone A tier when it comes to this stuff. And whether they're
Right.
A, C, A, B, C, or D tier, we'll be talking about each and every one of them each and every week here as part of the Major Issues podcast. You haven't been on in a while, A Rob, but I thank you for joining. As you know, we moved days. Now
Always.
we're coming out Thursdays. Gives us a little bit more time for those weekend releases and everything else coming about. We got some big stuff coming up. As you guys know, we've already we're in full blown with this collaboration with Dirt Sheet Radio. We're hosting them on our site, comicbookclick.com. And with that, we're getting a whole new influx of fandom of people. You might be listening to this episode for the first time because you just found it on the website. And if so, thank you. Go check out the over 300 episodes we've already put in the bag for this podcast, talking about everything, all the latest and greatest things to come to comic books and comic book media. And we all do that at our home. Comicbookclick.com is the one stop for all those things. Articles, editorials with opinions, articles written with facts. And it's you can get our merchandise there by going to Shop CBC on comicbookclick.com. You can give us some monetary support by going to patreon.com/CBCClubhouse, and for as little as 10 cents a day, $3 a month, you can help us keep our lights on here and afford the hardware and the software we need to keep providing you guys content free of charge. Like I said, we've given now you guys over 320 episodes absolutely free. We love doing it here, but if you could help us a bit, pay for a cup of coffee, pay for a sandwich here and there as I take our notes as we binge some of these series. I think, bro, we did Immortal Hulk once as an episode. That's a 50 issue series. We did a
Yeah,
50
man.
issue. It's not easy, man. Some of the stuff that we cover, but we cover it with love and we cover it with an attention to detail and a flair that only fans have. And we like to continue to do this. So if you could support us in any way, and put us in the right direction, tell a friend to tell a friend about the podcast, or even tell us what we're doing right and wrong by rating and reviewing us on iTunes. This is the quickest way for us to grow as podcasters and find out what you like and what you don't. Because I've been to the future where we do become the latest and greatest thing to come to podcasts and to comic books and comic book media and even podcast media. We're standing right there in our high rise, right next to Dirt Sheet Radio. We're sharing the same block, our two conglomerates. But I can't tell you how we get there, how we become the latest and greatest, because it'll mess up the future, and that'll mess up everything. And next thing you know, The Rock, so he's The Rock. Next thing you know, Dwayne Johnson is. Did you hear this story about him and Ryan Reynolds?
Oh no, what?
So supposedly, and I'll break the, I will take a break in the podcast for some Dwayne slander. So supposedly, The Rock has a habit of showing up to set 5 hours late on multiple occasions, and then when he'll get to set, so he doesn't leave, he'll just pee in a bottle and put the bottle somewhere on the set. So this has not made a lot of his co-stars happy. There's a rumor that him and Ryan Reynolds got into a big argument during Red Notice, but then it's now been said that it was more of a toned down, I need to talk to you, this can't happen kind of stuff, and they went back to being fast friends the next day. But yeah, you don't want, next thing you know, Dwayne's hosting this and I got pee bottles all over my house and he's showing up 5 hours late. The podcast coming out 5 hours late. It's coming out every day of this week. Do you people want that? No. So tell a friend to tell a friend, share the Major Issues podcast wherever you can. And we will see you guys next week for more anime. Did I do all my plugs? Facebook.com/comicbookclick, Instagram at comicbookclick, and use the hashtag comicbookclick to talk about the newest, hottest, latest, and greatest things to come to comic books and comic book media. We're at Major Issue CBC on X. And we're also at Major Issue CBC on Twitch. And I just got via PlayStation Plus Midnight Suns. So I might give that a bit of a spin
Hey.
over on Twitch and see what that game is looking like. Watch me get frustrated, because there's nothing more frustrating than not knowing where to go and you know 30 people are watching you do it. So watch me get frustrated on stream and tune in to All Things Comic Book Click to find out what we got cooking up next. If you want the people to find you, A-Rob, where can they do so?
You guys can find me at A Rob the Marvel God at basically any social media website.
Gang, gang, follow my man. My man snapping at these fools. Marvel snapping across the
Yeah,
board. So go
man.
ahead and check my man out over there, and he's doing some great things. And we're gonna get some really, really cool things to come out of A-Rob very, very soon as part of Comic Book Click. So stay tuned for that. There's some rumblings going on. Again, I said it before, and I'll say it again. We are the Babe Ruth rookie card of companies of podcasts. Snatch us now, because we're gonna be worth millions and millions in the future. And by then, the bandwagon will be so big, you'll be yelling at it. We can't hear. I can't hear you. We're in the front. Can't hear you. You could have had a seat right next to us early in the beginning. You know what I'm saying? You ain't do it. Now what? So get on the bandwagon before the bandwagon becomes full, and we will see you guys next week. But my name is George Serrano, aka the Don.
And I'm A Rob the Marvel God.
And this has been our Iron Man Rise of Technivore recap and review. And remember, whether you're a genius, billionaire, playboy, or philanthropist, a one-man war on crime, or a one-eyed man who likes to screw scrolls, remember that we are the click. And always remember that you, yes, you are worthy.